This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Gain access to your subjects. How did you recruit these ladies to be part of your project?
Well, there were many phases to the project. And at first, when I started, I was following only local people, up-and-comers in Portland. And one of them was Suad. And the rest of the subjects that I was following then, I'm no longer following. But I created a trailer with that, with the footage that I had from that. And then I tried to send it to more bigger name artists, and I sent it to Zia in the Dandy Warhols, and she got back to me like a year later and said she was interested. And then with Kristen is sort of nomadic person, so she's on tour like all the time. And so I just saw when she was in Portland, and I went to her shows, and I gave her the trailer, and I asked her, and she was very interested in being involved. So
great. And how did the idea for this project germinate? Before that phase, what compelled you to make a film about motherhood?
Well, I became a mother myself, and as an independent filmmaker, I was trying to figure out how to freelance and be a mother at the same time, and it was difficult because I couldn't pay for childcare, which would enable me to work. So it was just this like weird chicken or the egg kind of situation. So I was like, oh, I need a job so I can pay for childcare, but I can't secure childcare because I don't know when a job is going to come in. So I was looking around to try to find role models of people that I could ask, like, how do you make this work? What, you know, what are you doing? And it was during the dot-com crash in Portland and all over. And so work was not very plentiful. And so I was having a really hard time finding independent filmmaker moms, freelancer moms. People just aren't very vocal about it, or if they are filmmaker moms, they're mostly partnered up with their documentary film partner. And I am not. My husband is not in film at all, and he works a lot, and so he's very supportive, but we don't work together. So then I really like music, and I was reading Salon one day, and there was an article on there that was independent indie musicians who are moms talking about how they tour and how they operate with their kids. And I thought, wow, this situation is really similar to mine, in that they're indie musicians. They don't make a lot of money. They manage their own careers usually. They travel quite a bit and usually have a day job or are just past the day job phase. So I thought, oh, well, I'm interested in this, and I think this would be a really good film. I bet other people would too, and I bet other people could learn from their experiences as well.
So over the course of filmmaking, how would you say that you notice that things are different for female musicians with children than male musicians with children?
Well, you know, I can't really compare. You know, I don't really know male musicians' experiences. I think all indie musicians are struggling, period. Unless they get their music in a commercial or, you know, a movie where they can have residuals and earn a continuous living from their music like that. But with women, what I noticed over the course of filming, and keep in mind that from my idea stage to completion, it was almost a decade that I worked on this film. So I first came into the film thinking that, wow, this is so great. They can do everything and do everything well. And oh, gosh, you know, they epitomize the term rock star. That's awesome. And really, what I found out was it's really hard and it's really a struggle, and everybody makes it work their own way, but usually something is sacrificed. So
yeah, one of the opening lines in the films that I really liked was Kristen talking about performing while pregnant, and someone commenting on her set that since she was pregnant, she wasn't really rocking. And someone came up and told her, like, performing pregnant, that is rock. And that seems to be pretty in step with your experience.
I would say so, because, yeah. I mean, when you're pregnant, especially she performed, like, 8 months pregnant, 9 months pregnant, which is, so she's huge. And, you know, she's performing really late at night. And so she's probably, like, completely exhausted. I think she talks about that, how she, people would wake her up for a show because she was sleeping and she just didn't think she could go on. I mean, if that isn't punk rock, I don't know what is, frankly.
Absolutely. And you brought it up a little bit before. There was a little discussion of finances in the film, the idea that there are rich rock moms and that it makes things different than being a less rich rock mom. How did that come into play for your subjects?
Well, they're all indie musicians. Kristen and Zia don't have day jobs, and they make a living on their music. And Suad has a day job and performs. And even though Zia and Kristen make a living on their music, I mean, it's a hard living. I mean, they live, they can't afford to bring nannies with them on tour. They live like, I don't know, a little bit over the poverty line. You know, they own their own homes, which is great, but I mean, it's a struggle. It's really a struggle.
Well, to get information about the actual screening, mm-hmm. Could you give us a little bit of detail about the upcoming event at PowFest?
Sure. I'm really honored that PowFest is having the film open on March 7th. It's a Portland preview. The film is completed, but the credits are still in flux, and I need to up-res it to HD. So we're calling it a Portland preview instead of Portland premiere. And the program is going to start at 7 o'clock and with 40 minutes of music short films. And then Rock and Roll Mamas is going to show at 8 o'clock. And then there'll be a Q&A afterwards. And then there'll be the opening night party at Out Large Films. And Zia from Dandy Warhols is going to DJ a set at that party.
Right. What is her DJ moniker?
DJ Rescue.
DJ Rescue.
Yeah. She rescues party.
Yeah, I think that there was a phrase for her party self used in the film, Secret Agent McCabe.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully she'll be coming out.
Yeah, that Secret Agent McCabe is pretty fun.
Cool. Well, just before we close, what do you feel is the most important point that you want to get across to viewers about the women that you are filming, or the most important aspect of their lives?
Well, that they are doing everything that really good mothers. They try really hard in all aspects of their life, and they need to be creative, so they're making it work. I mean, it's a hard life, but if you need to express yourself, then you will get it done no matter what. So you will make it work even if it's really, really hard.
Yeah, well, the women in this film are very impressive, and I hope you guys go out and see it. Thank you so much for joining us, Jackie. I've been speaking with Jackie Weissman, the filmmaker behind Rock and Roll Mamas. For more information on the film or the upcoming screening, you can go to rockandrollmamas.com and powfest.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Jackie, and we look forward to the preview.
Thank you.
And now, for more about PowFest, let's go back to Conch, who's joined on the line by featured guest Penelope Spheris. One, two, three,
four. This is SW Concert for the film show, and I'm here with legendary director Penelope Spheris, who will be appearing at PowFest Saturday the 10th of March, to screen some movies and do a Q&A with local movie historian David Walker. Penelope Spheris, welcome to KBOO.
Oh, thank you so much. And I want to also say that Randall Johnson, that was the writer on Dudes, is going to be there speaking as well.
That's right. You've got three movies that are going to be screening at PowFest. There's Dudes, which is, it's got Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and some other punk folks. And there's, excuse me.
Oh, and it's also got John Cryer, believe it or not, as a punk rocker.
Oh, no kidding. And also yeah. Suburbia will be playing and Decline of Western Civilization 3 will be playing.
Right.
Well, we're going to be delighted to have you here in Portland. There's some old punks and young punks that are going to really look forward to seeing, especially Decline of Western Civilization 3. This is you revisiting the L.A. punk scene in the late 90s that you first covered in 1981.
Yes, that's true. And I Decline 3 has never been distributed, so it's kind of exciting for me to present it to an audience. We're working on the DVDs now, and they're going to, of all three movies, and they're hopefully going to come out this year, but Decline 3 has never been really seen anywhere.
Well, I want to make sure that people who don't recognize your name, Penelope Spheris, everybody will recognize some of your movies. You know, as far as film directors go, I don't think even Michael Apted has as varied a career as you. You've covered everything from punk documentaries to screwball comedies. Wayne's World is probably your biggest seller.
That one made it so that I couldn't really make anything else for the studios except comedies. But I'm not complaining, you know. Wayne's World, they gave me a nice piece of it, so we did that. We did a Little Rascal, we did the Beverly Hillbillies, we did Black Sheep with Chris Farley and David Spade and a bunch of comedies, and you know, but my heart really is with documentaries, so.
Well, even in Wayne's World, Rolling Stone named the Bohemian Rhapsody scene in Wayne's World one of the all-time greatest rock and roll movie moments.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, when we were shooting that, Mike was a little resistant to it because we had to do take after take after take, and understandable because his, you know, his neck and his head was hurting, and he, you know, kept asking for some aspirin, and then he said, well, could we just stop now because it's really not that funny, and it turns out it would be the most popular scene in the movie.
The headbanging scene, yes.
Yeah, I think he thinks it's funny now.
Well,
it just wasn't funny when he was doing it because it hurt. If you don't bang your head on a regular basis, it hurts.
No. And, you know, yeah, I think rock and roll really does sort of inform a lot of what you see in many of your movies. In fact, I heard somebody call you a rock and roll anthropologist.
They put me on the front of the Austin... you know, weekly paper and called me that years back, and it kind of stuck, you know.
Well, I've got a quote from you here. It's on the PowFest website, which is powfest.com, and it's got you saying, I think about myself as someone who studies human behavior and is trying to figure out what the hell is going on in our current society. If I can leave any film that helps define a certain time after I'm dead, then that's great. So how are you defining our society these days with films as varied as, Black Sheep and Decline of Western Civilization 3?
Well, those were a while back, and today I'll tell you my personal philosophy about the state of the world with regard to the media, and that is that I believe that we as filmmakers and television makers should start to try and take some responsibility because there's so much violence in the world that I kind of personally believe that when we make more violence in our entertainment products that we're contributing to the problem. So I'm going to personally go on a little, crusade here to try to cut back on the violence, you know, and I mean, you try to justify it and say, oh, well, gee, you know, Bin Laden really did that and we really got him, you know what I mean? But why do we have to recreate all that horribleness, you know? I'm on a one-woman mission to clean the world up, but I don't think I'll be able to do it.
Well, you know, you were a groundbreaking director in more ways than one. I believe you founded the first Hollywood studio back in the mid-70s that specialized in music videos.
Thank you. Yes, I had a production company called Rock and Reel, and it was way before MTV, and we shot really great bands. Like, I think I have some of the very, very few footage on the Funkadelics. you know,
right.
Parliament Funkadelic with George Clinton, and I shot Fleetwood Mac back in the day, and God, I even shot the Doobie Brothers. And, I mean, it goes on and on, and it was a great experience for me. I love putting music and film together, so I was really grateful for those days. And then MTV came along, and I started doing music videos for MTV, and then, you know, I did The Decline. Actually, I did The Decline before MTV.
Yeah, that was about 1980, 1981 you were shooting. It was Black Flag, Circle Jerks, Fear, X, all these L.A. punk bands before anybody knew about them.
Yeah, well, right. There were a lot of other great bands that I didn't shoot back then, and I think if I had, they would know about them, like the Screamers and the Weirdos and the Gears and the Mau Maus. I mean, there's a lot of great punk bands from back in the Christian Death. All from back in the day, and I sort of always feel guilty that I wasn't able to shoot more of them because people would know about them then, you know?
I wonder if Alex Cox's Repo Man, which came out a couple years after Decline, if that wasn't heavily influenced. It certainly seems to be by Decline
well,
of Western
Alex
Civilization.
Alex came to my office and said, how should I do this? So
oh,
we,
really?
we had a talk.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, I think you had a bit of preparation for the rough and tumble of the film world. I hope you don't mind my bringing this up, but your family were circus folk, I guess, and you were traveling with them almost from birth. Your dad was a sideshow strongman.
Yes, that's true, and we are, my daughter and I are in the midst of a book on the subject. It was carnival, it wasn't a circus. A circus has animals. We didn't have animals unless you include my dad. We're doing a book on this, and I think it'll be very interesting for people to learn about it.
Well, it'll be great to see you here in Portland. I don't know how often you've been here, but I'm sure a lot of people will be really interested in hearing what you have to say about art and film. And what are you particularly looking forward to about visiting Portland, visiting PowFest?
Well, I tell you, living in Hollywood for so long and doing the dance here, you kind of don't really deal with real people. Recently, I've been taking classes to get a license to foster children because there's 35,000 children in Los Angeles County that need homes. And so when I'm there in the classes learning about that, I am with real people. And the reason I'm looking forward to going to Portland is that I feel that I can find some more real people there.
Well, I hope you do. You're going to be here on the 10th of March. Again, it's going to be at the Hollywood Theater. This is PowFest, Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival. Hollywood Theater at 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. And let's see, Dudes is screening at 2 p.m. Suburbia.
With the writer, who, you know, Randall Johnson is the writer of Dudes, and he also wrote the Doors movie and a lot of other really amazing films, and he's a resident of Portland.
And 7 p.m. is Suburbia, and 9 p.m. is Decline of Western Civilization 3. You'll be talking with David Walker doing Q&As. He's the local movie historian. There will be over 85 films at PowFest, and you can find out more at POWFest.com. Penelope Spheris, it's been a real pleasure to have you join us here on the film show.
Thank you so much for including me in your programming, and you're an awesome interviewer.
Ha, very nice to hear. And we will be including an extended version of this interview on the website, so be sure to go to kboo.fm. Thanks again, Penelope Spheris.
Thank you.
And we're going to head back to Jen for the film calendar.
Okay, take care.
Thank you, Conch. Here's some interesting film events in the upcoming month for you to possibly go to. From tonight, the 28th, through Saturday, the 2nd, you can catch the end of the Cascade Festival of African Films with 7 screenings left at PCC's Cascade Campus. Tying up the fest is Women's Filmmakers Week. To learn more, go to africanfilmfestival.org. Tonight, the 28th, marks the Portland premiere of Foreplay, an anthology film about sexuality at the Clinton Street Theater. The film screens at 8 p.m., and screenings continue nightly through Sunday the 3rd with director Kyle Henry in attendance the first 3 nights. For more information, visit cstpdx.com. From tomorrow, the 1st, through Monday, the 4th, the Northwest Film Center will show the 2012 British Arrow Awards, a juried survey compilation of notable British advertising. Multiple screenings per day throughout the weekend. To learn more, visit nwfilm.org. On March 7th, Local Collective Cinema Project continues a five-part exhibition at Yale Union on Southeast 10th with a multimedia lecture and performance, Green. I'm sorry, that's March 8th, and that's artist Angie Kiefert. Her performances include components such as audio recordings, film, and digital projections. The final performance of the series Waterfall takes place on March 22nd. Both start at 7:30. For more info, go to yaleunion.org. And on the 7th, Cinema Project continues its season with Circle in the Sand and other recent work by Michael Robinson, who will be in attendance. Go to cinemaproject.org for more info on that. On March 11th at the Hollywood, the Columbia River Theater Organ Society presents the 1928 film The Last Man with live organ accompaniment. Go to hollywoodtheater.org for more information. And on March 14th, the Clinton Street Theater continues its KABU at the Clinton series at 7 p.m. with Grateful Dead Night. It'll feature the documentary Festival Express, along with some other surprises. This series has a new program on the second Thursday of every month. Check out cstpdx.com for more info. From March 28th through the 31st, the Faux Film Festival returns to take over the Clinton Street Theater, spotlighting new and exciting spoof, satire, parody, and mockumentary shorts and features. Go to fauxfilm.com for more info. And on March 30th and 31st, experimental filmmakers Tom Anderson and Morgan Fisher will be in Portland to discuss their work as part of an ongoing retrospective put on by Yale Union. To learn more, visit yaleunion.org. That about wraps it up. Thanks, and back to you, Conch.
Thanks, Jen. And we are now joined in the studio by local video merchant Mike Clark, whose store Movie Madness has seen all sorts of excitement lately. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
And we should mention, full disclosure, that one of our employees, or one of your employees, is also a volunteer here at KABU and a person on the show. Jen Chavez is associated with Movie Madness. Yes, but I don't think your publicity guy knew that when he called me up.
I don't think he did either.
Anyway, so Movie Madness is in Southeast Portland. It's been there for many, many years, and you have survived where other larger outfits such as Hollywood and Blockbuster have not. So that's a pretty good track record there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My store is a very unique store, and it carries a lot of unique titles, and titles you won't find on Netflix or Redbox or the Blockbusters or the Hollywoods that have since disappeared. My store is still standing, and I'm hoping that it will continue standing.
And you have a lot of celebrities actually come in from out of town. They look for unusual titles.
Absolutely.
A lot of psychotronic stuff, a lot of, not necessarily large studio stuff.
Right. A lot of them, for example, Alex Cox loves Movie Madness, so does Bruce Campbell's been in the store a couple times in the past. I've had Linda Blair. I've had PJ Souls, who was the girlfriend interest to Bill Murray from Stripes. She also was in Rock and Roll High School. She's been to my store several times. Bill Plimpton, the artist, the cartoonist, the animator, wonderful guy. He's been to Movie Madness and loves it as well, and many more.
Now, there's sort of no end of excitement sometimes when it comes to events and non-scheduled events, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. I want to set this up by mentioning that in your store, there's what you call a museum. There's a lot of exhibits of props and costumes from the golden days of Hollywood. You actually worked as an editor down in L.A. for quite a while, so you gathered a bunch of outfits and prop items that are now displayed around the store.
That is correct. I started off as a film editor and later became a post-production coordinator, mainly for Warner Brothers and MGM. And that was in the 70s and the 80s. And when I opened up the video store, Movie Madness, in 1991, I didn't have in my possession at that time. I didn't have any costumes or props or anything. I didn't really start adding them into the store until about 95 when I bought my first costume, which was worn by Diane Keaton from the movie Godfather 2. And I saw it on display and Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace at a place called Antique International, which was right next to Planet Hollywood. And when I saw Planet Hollywood and I saw all these wonderful costumes and props that they had on display, I thought this is something that I could do too. And so I ended up purchasing the Diane Keaton dress. Pretty soon came the Towie Shire dress from the same movie. And then pretty soon other things started to fall into place. And then pretty soon I started doing the auctions. And I just kept adding on and on and on. And now I think last count is that we have close to 100 costumes, authentic costumes that were worn by actors and actresses from some of the greatest movies ever made, plus over around 30 props from various different movies that I'm very proud of to have on display. It's the Hollywood Museum of Movie History is what I call it.
So last summer, I guess, you had a scene sort of out of a movie that happened in your store, and one of your display cases has a number of prop guns, real-looking guns for movies such as The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance and The Wild Bunch, and why don't you take over the story?
Okay. Basically, it happened the last Tuesday of the month in July, just last July, last summer, and this guy comes in the store, and I had no idea that what he was up to, you know. And you figure that there, we had like a handful of customers. It was a very hot afternoon, so there wasn't very many people in the store. I was coming down from my office. My office is up above the store, and I was coming into the store from the break room, and a couple of my customers came running over to me. They wanted to know where the prop guns were because they noticed that my case was open, and they thought that maybe I had opened it and I was having the guns clean. And that's what triggered the whole thing. So we put everything down on a lockdown. And, you know, we made sure that the culprit wasn't still in the store. He wasn't. He had just escaped out the back door and taken the guns with him. Two guns, one shotgun that was used by William Holden from the movie The Wild Bunch during the last segment of the movie. And the other was the actual Winchester that was used by John Wayne when he shoots Lee Marvin in the movie The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Both of those weapons were taken by him, and I never thought in a million years we would ever get them back.
And no firing pin, no nothing, so it's useless.
Yeah,
to be
well, see, it. Like the Wild Bunch weapon was originally loaned out to Warner Brothers by the Ellis Prop Department, which was across the street from Warner Brothers, and when they sent it over to Warner Brothers, they put a firing pin in so it can fire blanks. And then that firing pin was removed when it was brought back, and when it went up for the auction, it has been removed. So
long story short, you get a call from a guy. Actually, a guy just walks in just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago on a Sunday, I get a call from Jen, who works for you guys.
Our co-host Jen Childs,
yeah,
right here.
She calls me up and she tells me that you're not going to believe this, but a guy just walked in, dropped out these two big, huge garbage bags, and supposedly both of them, each one was containing one of the guns that was missing. I couldn't believe it when I got the phone call at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday. So I told Jen not to do anything, not to call the police, not to notify the press or anybody. I was going to get down there with the serial numbers to make sure that these were the correct guns. And when I got down there and I unwrapped them and everything else, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. The serial numbers matched. Everything was intact.
Just a good
they
Samaritan
were in very good condition.
Good Samaritan had found him on Mount Tabor.
Yeah, found him up at Mount Tabor at a little area that was a little tree farm. And he saw both of these big, huge sacks containing both of the guns stuck in this bush, and he went over to investigate. He couldn't figure out what it was, and then as he felt the sacks and kind of pushed them in a little bit, he could feel that they were guns.
But fortunately, only prop guns, so the police didn't get involved. Just another day in the life of movie madness. We'll have to have you on again to tell some more stories.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Thank you so much.
Yes, Mike Clark, thanks so much. We want to thank thank you for coming in, and we want to thank many of our guests this morning. I'm SW Conser with The Film Show.
And I'm Jen Chavez. We'd like to thank Mike Clark joining us from Movie Madness, Penelope Spears, and Jackie Weissman for their preview of the upcoming Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival.
And thanks also to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration, and to all of our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. An expanded version of the show will be available later today at kboo.fm/thefilmshow. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Raven's Flight Creative, presenting an evening with author, comedian, inventor, and mustache enthusiast John Hodgman from The Daily Show. John Hodgman speaks at the Baghdad Theater Thursday, March 7th at 7 p.m. The Baghdad Theater is at 3702 Southeast Hawthorne, and accompanied minors are welcome. Tickets at cascadetickets.com.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, February 28th, 2013. I'm Kristen Yount. The European Union made an overnight decision to cap bankers' salaries in response to public outrage over what protesters call the greed of bankers. The mayor of London is concerned that this will cause London bankers to move outside of the UK to do business. A meeting of the EU finance ministers next week in Brussels will likely confirm this cap on bankers' salaries, and Britain will be unable to use its veto. Army Private Bradley Manning pled guilty to minor charges that he misused classified information, but maintains his innocence on the more serious charge of aiding and abetting the enemy. His lawyers say they hope his plea will help reduce his sentence, which could be up to 20 years on these charges alone. If he is found guilty of aiding the enemy, he could face a sentence of life in prison. Two Portland activists were released from Seattle prison today after serving 5 months for refusing to cooperate with a federal grand jury. The U.S. District Court of the Western District of Washington released KTO Olgenic and Matthew Duran, although a third grand jury resister remains in prison. Federal prosecutors can hold these so-called recalcitrant witnesses for up to 18 months without charge. They were never charged with any crime, but they are held in prison to pressure them to testify in a closed grand jury proceeding allegedly having to do with property damage at a federal building at last year's May Day rally. Today's weather is rain all day with high temperatures.